My name is Michael Bailey, and you're listening to the EDP Formula One podcast.
Hello, welcome to the EDP Formula One podcast as we look back at the Italian Grand Prix, or if you like, the end of the 2013 season. My name's Michael Bailey. Joining me around the pod this week, I've got Perry Hamilton.
Hello.
And Carl Cumbers.
Hello there.
So I've just allowed you to say hello there straight after your names, straight in.
That's veteran broadcasting.
This is skills. A seamless operation.
That's exactly
these
right. That's it. Next time when you say Perry, I'm going to go hello. Yeah. I'm going to cut you off when you get to the Hamilton part.
Well, they'll just think your name's Perry. Hello then.
Well, that's it. Then that means that whenever anyone calls by my first name, they're always talking to me.
Love it.
Which I think is great.
I think that works. Italy then, Monza. I thought it was a pretty enjoyable race, but then I'm a Formula One fan who's probably used to not worrying about who wins.
Like I said, I think if you take out Vettel...
I wish someone would.
That's a good point.
No, I don't.
Quick
no,
line.
I don't, no,
quick
I don't.
Line.
Don't mean like that. Don't mean that.
It would be a very good race. Unfortunately, people see a good race as a battle for the lead, but that's not necessarily always the case. So, but yeah, maybe for the casual fan, maybe it wasn't a great race, but for the fanatic, it was a good race.
Sebastian Vettel won, needless to say, almost. He didn't even have to overtake someone on the first lap this time. He only just had to lock up on the first corner, and that was pretty much it, wasn't it?
Which he apologised for, after the race was done. It's almost like he was going back through his head going, I need to say something.
What did I do?
I can't
wrong?
Just go,
what happened?
That was so easy, I'm almost bored. There was none of that. He just like, great drive, well done. Sorry for the lock-up on the first corner, guys. Other than that, I was perfect. You can pretty much hear the undertones that he knows how good he is. And to be fair, he drove a stormer. He did. Wow. He kept it in command. I mean, especially they were having a short shift between gears two and three in the chicanes. You know, that's not easy to do. I mean, it was not so bad that you don't have someone breathing down your neck to do it. And then obviously as the race wore on, there were more and more concerns about the car and what have you, but you know, managing to bring it home and drive it the way he did a great job. We do bash Seb a little bit on here because we, as Kyle quite rightly says, you know, we want battles for the lead, but really he's doing a superlative job to bring a walkerism in there.
At least we don't boo him every time we mention him, I suppose.
That's not cool. That's not something I enjoy. You know, okay, it's Ferrari's home turf and everything, but you know, you've got to respect the guy for what he is. He's the best driver in the world. So the points say he's the best driver in the world right now.
Also, Lewis Hamilton was booed the last year for winning. So I don't think it's just a Sebastian Vettel thing. I think it's just whoever beats Ferrari.
If you're not in a red car.
Exactly, yeah.
And that doesn't include Red Bull. or Marussia, yeah. Don't think they'd be... Well, yeah, it's just a pointless conversation. I mean, you could normally say that Sebastian Vettel, I suppose, tends to get the good side of Red Bull's reliability even when things do... rarely go wrong, but as Ped mentioned, I mean, they both had to sort of manage gearbox issues, didn't they? And it seemed to me that Christian Horner and Adrian Newey, although they always seem to play up to this most races, even when they win at a canter, they seem to be genuinely worried that it wasn't quite going to happen.
Yes, they looked very relieved at the end, more than normal. I mean, obviously Mark Webber has his continuous curse problem, which maybe... the way he uses Kurs, or maybe because he's a little bit taller.
I think he's too tall.
I think
he's too tall. They've had to bundle it all up. They've had to put it together, and it overheats, and maybe he moves around inside the cockpit more than anyone else. I don't know. Maybe his knee knocks something. I genuinely think it's something to do with his size, because he is one of the taller guys on the grid, isn't he?
And then, how Nui compacts his cars and wraps them so tightly. So, yeah.
Love it.
It makes... it can't be a coincidence. I mean,
no.
The amount of times that... You know,
I'll tell you what,
and all these bad starts. I don't know if that's.
I'll tell you what, as a in the name of science, in the name of science, I will sacrifice myself. I will drive a Red Bull for a season, right? And if my Kurs, because I'm 6'4" ish, if my Kurs messes up as well, we know it's a height issue. So I'll put it out there, Christian, Adrian, whatever, Dietrich Mateschitz.
I'm glad you almost got that right.
What is his name? I don't know. Whatever.
Red Bull
Dietrich Mateschitz.
Dietrich Mateschitz, whatever. Red Bull man, I will drive your car for you. You won't even have to pay me. Just pay my travel fare around the country. and we'll see if Kurs is related to height. There you go.
I would like to see the stat. Science. When Webber starts next to Vettel, how often he gets a good start to bad start. That was brought to me by something else, but yeah, I would like to see the stats to see.
I like that.
If there is a, what's the word?
Correlation?
Yes, yeah.
You're suggesting Mr. Vettel might be the carrot that Mark needs. Not that he needs to worry about these things for much longer, it must be said. All right, then, let's clear this up then, shall we? Who is anyone else going to win this year's driver's title?
Possibly.
Okay. You're more optimistic than I would have thought.
Yeah, I think
it was a definite leading question.
There's still a chance. Maybe that's hope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who would you pin your hopes to?
It's got to be Alonso, really, but
okay.
If you had to put money on it, you certainly wouldn't put money on anybody else winning.
Okay. We'll get
to it. A couple of bad races, gearbox goes wrong in Singapore, and Alonso wins, but I don't know. Let's hope more than
expectation. Yeah. We'll get stuck into Ferrari in a bit, I'm sure. Ped?
Well, there's still more chance of someone else winning the world championship than I've got of winning the lottery.
Or getting that drive with Red Bull.
Hey,
sorry.
That's for science, all right? Now, Adrian Newey's a scientific man. I'm sure he'll see reason. Anyway, normally, Michael, you and I, we talk about this, and I always remain optimistic, and I say, no, it's possible. The season's not over until it's over, until it's mathematically. As far as I'm concerned, when you go to a track where everyone says they're not going to be as strong, it's not just them playing up to them going, oh, we probably won't be as strong, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Everyone says, look, we know they're not as good in the straight line. We know it's the high-speed corners and things that they really do excel at. And when you dominate like that, I literally just sit there going, well, it's game over, isn't it? When you're that good, when you're not supposed to be that good, it's just academic from here on in, I think. They don't show the reliability issues that mean we... Because we do always say that whole, couple of bad races and all he's got to do is not finish twice and have the same person win the race and that's 50 points. It doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen. The cars are too reliable. The drivers are too reliable. And I don't know. I think the tracks play to them now. I think they do very well.
Sebastian Vettel will be winning this world championship. Red Bull will be winning the constructors' title. So we're just going to have to talk about other stuff.
Yeah.
Probably from about now.
Well, it's good because now is the point where people start looking towards next season to see how that driver seating is going to shuffle around. So now you've already got some confirmations, which I'm sure, Michael, you've got written down to talk about later in the pod. Some big, big confirmation news of who's going to be driving where next year. So I won't rain on that parade for you, but this is where you start looking towards next year and you think, right, teams that now, I mean, Italy is the benchmark. There are teams that are now going to be completely putting their development towards 2014, not just in the car and the technical stuff, but they'll be looking to finalise their staff lineups as well, and that's always worth looking at.
Cue DT's pit stop impression. Straight in with the EDP F1 pit stops then, shall we? Let's talk about Ferrari, who seem to still bungle their strategy more than once. You can't seem to rely on them to get it right. It also seems that their chairman, Luca di Montezemolo, decides who's going to race for the team after just the one race of each year, which is the one presumably closest to him. And then he makes an executive decision, which he's currently in the process of doing, as to who will drive for them next year, presumably alongside Fernando Alonso. Better from Ferrari, Fernando coming second. Felipe had a very good race, out-qualified his teammate too.
Yeah, it was better. Race pace, if Mercedes, well, if Lewis Hamilton got it right, and maybe Raikkonen qualified better, I think there'd have been a battle with them, so I don't know if that's an improvement, big improvement. But Massa was better, but it's a bit too late for him. He seems to, I think it's 2 years in a row he's out qualified Alonso.
In Italy. Alonso,
yeah. But I don't know if that was the whole Ferrari slipstreaming
geniuses effort. What a genius idea it was. You seem to fully appreciate it. They played that down a little bit, but it was probably the best radio message of the weekend.
I think there's one later on.
It was in Italian.
He actually called them idiots, which is quite good.
He's laying into them a fair bit. I don't know if we all saw Felipe Massa's post-race interview, but to me it sort of spoke of a man who was like, yeah, I'm probably off, but they just haven't confirmed it yet, but hopefully everyone else has seen what I can do, which is pretty much something he didn't say last year, even at the depths.
He was confident last year, wasn't he, of keeping his seat, and many people weren't, so yeah, it definitely looks like he's on his way, and possibly F1, which would be a bit of a shame, but maybe it is.
There's always new blood.
Yeah, but losing two likeable veteran Brazilian drivers, you lose Rubens and you lose Massa and you lose all these people. I mean, it would be a shame, wouldn't it? It would be a shame to lose Massa from the grid. I do like Massa. He's bet on himself this year. You know, he sort of stuck around with Ferrari when he probably could have, maybe, should have jumped and gone somewhere else, you know, and he stuck around. Everyone's there kind of thinking, do you even have the passion anymore? Or are you just happy to sit in that second place spot? And I don't think he does. I think, you know, out-qualifying. I think a very interesting point would be, you know, solid second for Alonso in the race. Yeah, but if Massa had been allowed to race him, would Massa have retained second? You don't know. I mean, obviously Massa didn't stay on the podium, but is that because of his driving or is that because of the way that the team runs things? You just don't know. So I think it would be great. If a team like, I mean, I hear Toro Rosso might have an empty seat next year. A team like Toro Rosso reaches out to Massa, that would be great. It won't happen because they're an academy team, so that's, you know, programming up. But even someone like a Force India or a Sauber.
Return to Sauber, maybe.
Yeah, you know, that would be ideal for him because he's got championship calibre cars underneath him in the past. He's got that experience of what it's like to work in a team with a culture of success, which is what Ferrari has, and that goes a long, long way, and he can bring a lot of information to a team, and he's still quick.
It'd be nice to see what would happen if he was freed up to lead a team, wouldn't it?
It does show how nice a bloke he is, that if he thinks he's on his way out, but he still plays a team game and lets Alonso go by, it does show he's a good team player.
Certainly has that in him. So, of course, if Felipe is out, which, you know, looks highly possible, who steps in? We're recording this on Monday afternoon, Monday evening, where Autosport are reportedly saying that Kimi Raikkonen is going to give himself 48 hours to make his decision, which is 2 days after Lotus said they'd need a week to get him reassurances over what they can deliver for him next year. That, to me, says that he's not staying at Lotus.
Yeah, it's an interesting timeline. But the last time we had a countdown for Kimi to announce something, it was a very disappointing clothing line.
It was a clothing line. So whatever happened? Did we not? We didn't buy any of that, did we? We should have bought some of those.
What's this? Why would we? Collectively, as a pod. Is it like a bet? Like, buy it if you buy it, Michael. No. It's
I didn't see the merch, so I'm not sure.
I wasn't. It's just plain t-shirts. That was boring stuff. No offense, Kimi, but I mean, Kimi's not exactly the most excitable guy off the track, is he? So, you know, he doesn't have this strong charisma. On the track, he's electric. But yeah, I mean, when you have other teams out there that have bigger budgets, more history of success, and I mean, only, you know, Renault, as they have been in the past when they were Renault, have been very successful, but you've got those teams that have that legacy and they've got the budget and they've got the ability to deliver on it consistently. And if you're Kimi Raikkonen and you're serious about making a play and becoming a world champion again in Formula 1, I would say that now would be the time to jump when you've got, you know, some spaces opening up at top teams.
Interesting to see how he gets on if he goes to Ferrari, because it didn't end exactly too well.
No. I mean, he won his world championship there and spent 3 years there, but it did get a little bit sour.
Yeah, I mean, they paid him rumoured to be $17 million to clear off, and so they could get Alonso in. So, interesting to see how he gets on in the Ferrari environment, because I think Lotus sort of suits him at the moment, because he can literally do what he wants, can he? Because he's the big fish. And for example, in Brazil last year, he didn't want to turn up for the Thursday, so they didn't let him. But I can't see Ferrari sort of allowing him to do certain things like that. So it'll definitely be interesting, especially also onto Alonso. He's like for a weaker second driver.
Someone to help him out.
Yeah, somebody to help him out.
He wants a rear gunner. No,
Kimi doesn't really help out, does he?
He wants a rear gunner, and that's not Kimi. You're going to have two guys who are both used to being the number one, and you know, it could be great because they could push each other, and what have you. But
I suppose, I mean, Ferrari's argument might be, well, he's had a rear gunner for the last two, three, however long it's been. Five? How long? They've been together a few seasons, haven't they?
Oh, God, yeah.
4 years?
4 years,
and it's not really worked, has it? So no, maybe I mean, Alonso's throwing enough abuse at his team at the moment. It could be quite an interesting one. Of course, Red Bull opted not to go for Kimi, be that whether they felt they had to go for Daniel Ricciardo, and I am pronouncing his surname correctly, which he doesn't, just to stipulate. Look, if Kimi goes to, I mean, just to, you know, predict the whole merry-go-round, Kimi to Ferrari, space at Lotus, Nico Hülkenberg, who is currently in the running for the Ferrari seat at the moment, and, yeah, and had a glint in his eye when he was asked about it. But that might just be because he's going to get a better drive next year, and he had a very, very good race weekend.
Could it be a whole Alonso's had enough of Ferrari, just complete rumour, he goes back to Lotus / Enstone with Santander money, and then there's Kimi Raikkonen and Nico Hülkenberg.
Would he? Would he? No. Do you
that's
think
big risk,
he would
leave?
He's come out recently and said that he wants to finish his career at Ferrari. Of course, the big caveat that's never spoken on that is, if Ferrari is a suitable place for me to win multiple championships, yeah, because you never want to finish your career out just going, oh, what could have been the last 10 years? You know, you want to win those races, you want to win that championship. I think the team is geared to stay around Alonso. The team is geared to work with Alonso. They recognise that they have possibly the greatest pure skill driver on the track, and he will stay that way for the next 5 years at the least, I think.
Because James Allison has also moved across from to Ferrari, so Kimi will have someone he's known there and who did. Yeah.
That's, I assume Fernando worked with him.
Well, that's what he did. Did he? I think when.
Must have, he's been there a while.
At Renault as well, so.
Interesting to see how they, yeah, see what he can do.
Be interesting. I hope Nico Hülkenberg gets his move as well.
He deserves a drive now. I mean, he probably deserved the McLaren drive last year.
Well, his move to Sauber this year has not been worth all the fanfare, has it?
No, but he got so much more out of that car on the weekend than anyone had a right to, probably.
Yeah, but it's not been a consistently good performance. You know, even a blind squirrel finds a nut once in a while. Maybe this is Nico Hülkenberg's nut. You know, who knows? But maybe the track particularly suited the car. I don't know. But I wouldn't... Personally, if it was me, I wouldn't say that we've seen enough to start lauding Nico for a Ferrari seat. I mean, a Ferrari seat, that's the pinnacle, isn't it? That's the one that says you have arrived in Formula 1.
I mean, he did... If Luca is, you know, making his decisions off one race, he did find the right nut.
Oh yes, he did. Yeah, he found an absolutely cracking nut. But I don't know. For me, a move to get Nico Hülkenberg would say that all Ferrari are doing are pinning all their hopes on Fernando, which can be dangerous because, as I've said, even though he says he wants to end his career there, you give him two more seasons of, you know, complete dross, and I would understand that he's still got prime years of driving ahead of him, he'd be looking elsewhere.
We'll have to see how it all pans out. Well, yes, exactly. This is it, isn't it? We'll have to see how it all pans out in the next few days, I suppose. We'll get a bit of news maybe by the time we arrive in Singapore. That's a metaphorical we. Sadly, we're not off
there. Speak for yourself, I'll be testing for Red Bull.
yeah, you are. You've got to get your seat fitted.
They've got a tyre test this week, haven't they?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't want to talk it up, guys, but, you know,
get yourself down to Barcelona.
I'll get some photos and just check to make sure that the curse is working properly. I'll do a few laps.
To be honest, I'd head to Barcelona anyway. It's a fantastic city. Mercedes, then. Oh, no, I'll tell you what, but just before we come to Mercedes, just on Lotus, they have their new long wheelbase car, all part of their 2014 preparations. They didn't spend that long with their long wheelbase car. So I guess they'll have more to learn about that over the coming races. It's obviously a big thing as part of their 2014 development. Romain Grosjean did have a very good race, though. Picked up a fair few places. I think it was five, wasn't it? Maybe something like that.
Yes, from his grid.
Yeah. Nice to see Romain. Might be team leader there next year. You just don't know, do you?
Jesus.
Oh, I still like Romain.
There's always hope for Romain. I don't disagree with you, Michael. I don't disagree with you. He's a likeable guy, and that's why we like him. But is he a competent, consistent racing driver? Is he? Can you honestly look at him and everyone else in GP2 and everyone else that's vying for a seat and say, I would rather have him than on his past performance than maybe see what some of these other guys can do? I don't know. I think we said at the beginning of the year that this was a make or break season for Romain, and for me, it's not broken, but it's certainly starting to crack.
Well, in the aid of science, maybe I should volunteer myself to race the Lotus and to offer decent control for Roman's efforts.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because you think you would be as dangerous as Roman would be, and if there's a correlation between the two of you on the track, then you can say, look, he's just a normal guy. Yeah. You know,
and you tried it, so I thought I'd have a
Well, no, that's fine. Yeah, I mean, if you can talk your way into a seat, Michael, well done. Not all of you have the gift of the gab like myself. So
I think the go kart track proved that I am probably a much better racer, though. I think we can.
Yeah, but you see, that way you wouldn't be testing for Romain Grosjean, then, would you? Surely, because you know you'd actually be able to corner without hitting people.
Well, possibly. Anyway, I feel we've gone slightly off topic, but well done, Romain. Anyway, Mercedes and Lewis. Now, for me, Lewis Hamilton's driving on Sunday was a real highlight because he had to do everything twice pretty much.
Yeah.
And I remember just towards the end of the race just thinking, I hope he doesn't just get out of the car and moan again or look like he's been crushed on the inside. But he did. And obviously he was very hard on himself after qualifying, which was a fair disaster, but it wasn't like he drove it into a wall.
Yeah, but I suppose the argument is we moan about drivers coming out of the car and blaming the car or blaming this. At least he came out and said, yeah, it's my fault. He tried to get the car straighter, got a wheel on the gravel and away he went. But I'd rather the driver say, yeah, I got it wrong, than I blame this, blame that, you know, it was my fault. And I think even though he says that Vettel winning doesn't depress him, it must, because I think he's still, I think Alonso and Hamilton regard themselves as better than Vettel. He's gutted by not winning. I'm quite happy for somebody to be gutted by not winning. And also, slow punch as well, which is pretty unlucky.
And the broken radio, though he kept missing his pit stops. So, and the poor McLaren Mercedes crew were out there for 2 minutes rather than 8 seconds or whatever it is.
Yeah, so if somebody's gutted by not doing too well, I'd rather them do that than be all happy because they ninth.
Well, don't get me wrong, as a journalist I love people saying really interesting things rather than the mundane. It was just the sort of the crushing attitude that came with it, and you a guy who's as good as Lewis is, you just want him to go, look, you know what, that was terrible, I was all over the place, I'll be right on it tomorrow. That's almost what and you can see from the way he was constructing passes with Kurs and DRS, and there's no one better on the grid than constructing a pass than Lewis Hamilton. He does it so well, and he was racing like that, so maybe it's just all bravado and show, which obviously doesn't sound like Lewis at all. But when he's in the car he's probably happier than anywhere else, I should think.
I think that's it, and actually I quite like the fact that someone like Lewis Hamilton, who is a world champion, who is one of the best drivers, you know, in the world, who has come out and signed with a new team. No one expected anything of him, and suddenly, bam, you know, he's up there, he's winning races, he's getting pole positions and lockouts and things. Someone like that can still be devastated by a bad performance. It shows that racing still matters to him. Just break it down to him being faster than the other guys, because that's what racing is. You have to be faster than the other guys. And to him, when he doesn't do it well, he's devastated by that. And I think that's great, because it shows the right kind of passion. As you say, Michael, you then need to be able to channel that. You then need to be able to say, I'm really frustrated and annoyed by that, but just you guys watch out, because next time I'm going to blow you all away. That's what you need to be able to do.
Love it. Let's stop off at Scuderia Toro Rosso, shall we? We should call them that for Monza. They had a very good qualifying, and Jean-Éric Vergne had did they have a good qualifying, Kyle?
They did.
I thought they did.
Jev
had more bad luck and ended up crawling over to the side of the track with it's either hydraulics or engine issue, wasn't it? There was smoke gushing from the
great reaction from Jensen as well. Jensen was literally on his gearbox as it went.
Good old Jensen. But Daniel Ricciardo, he perform well, he seemed to have a spring in his step, he looks like a man who is very happy with his world and looking forward to the next few months.
He qualified 7th, finished 7th?
Yeah. Which is his best finish? 7th?
Possibly.
His best qualifying, so he's qualified 6th. I think that's his best finish.
Love it.
I trust you, Carl.
It's making up.
So
So good, I've predicted Ricciardo top sevens at, or top eights at some point during this season, not this race.
Probably at some point during the season.
Yeah, at some point during the season.
I'm probably just saying, predicted everything at some point.
I've been pro Ricciardo for a long time. I think he's a great driver. I think he's very quick. Really happy to see him getting a shot next year. What has made me laugh heartily is Christian Horner coming out and barefaced lying to us by saying, yet he will not be treated as a number two driver. He will be given free rein to compete with Seb. That, to me, is, yeah, okay, for the first race, yeah, because everyone's even, that's fine. But literally, after that first race, unless you are 3/10 to 4/10 quicker than Seb a lap, he's going to show his dominance over you. As soon as he gets those first points in the bag and you don't, he's the number one guy and you will never claw that back, well, never, ever, ever.
I think Ricciardo has an advantage over Webber in the fact that he's come through the Red Bull ranks. I think there might be a little bit more support for Ricciardo than there was Webber. I still agree, I think Vettel is the main man, but I think he might get a bit more support than Webber did.
I hope so. Yeah. It'd be interesting if Christian, I mean, all he has to do is deploy the I can't start this car and Kurz fail buttons on the number two car, and then Daniel Ricciardo won't have an answer to that. I'm sure those buttons don't really exist. It was interesting when Sebastian Vettel arrived in the green room after the race. He looked through the scores. He looked, oh, Daniel seventh. Yeah. Did look for his.
What I loved most about the green room was the hearty handshake between Webber and Alonso, and the there was almost like a hug, and the gentleman's handshake that was quite frosty between Mark Webber and Sebastian.
Some things will never change.
Yeah,
I do feel a bit sorry for Vettel in those sort of situations. He sort of stand there, want, you know, congratulate me, you know, let's talk about my win, and Webber and Alonso.
But those guys, yeah, but those guys, really Webber well. And Alonso, they, yeah, not only did that, but they battled really, really well through that whole race. They were at each other's throats, but it was really respectful racing. There was lots of passing, a lot of aggression and a lot of tenacity, but there was also the respect and the racing within the rules and just showing how to do it, really.
Meanwhile, Sebastian was looking outside the window at the crowds gathering for the podium and itching to get outside, so it's probably a little element of the two psyche there as well, I should imagine. Williams, well, I wanted to tell, they've made bigger losses this year, decreasing turnover, the team's clearly struggling and what's happening on the track isn't doing them any favours, so just wanted to give them a quick mention. I suppose they're the works team that Formula One is almost outstripping in terms of finances in a way. Red Bull, Ferrari, McLaren have more history and tradition and bigger backing. Williams haven't quite got that as an independent works team, and next year could be, well, could be even worse.
Yeah, because so they're going to Mercedes next year, really? Is that correct? Yeah. Which maybe is Toto Wolff connection.
I'm sure
he helped him out by that. I also heard a rumour that was Sky reporting that Ross Brawn was going to buy a stake in Williams, which would
be interesting.
Yeah, so I don't know if Ross Brawn is. Well, they were pushed out of Mercedes.
Yeah, there were reports earlier that he was going to go.
People floating around.
I thought he'd be gone by now, you know, but no, I think they're going to let him see the season out and put him on some gardening leave, and then I don't think he'll be there next year.
Great to see him.
That would be wonderful. Williams. I think he'd do a really, really, really good work.
Because Pat Simmons is now Williams, isn't he?
He is.
And did Ross Brawn work with Pat Simmons in the Benetton days?
That certainly sounds possible, yeah.
I don't know if they might try and rekindle the.
Love it.
The Oracle. Maybe. Bringing up Benetton. So wow. Get some works.
Get some points for predicting that one, Kyle.
Yeah. Kudos points.
Caterham, because we should mention them, because they're one of our local teams. It's probably all I need to say, really, because not a lot happened, and they're one race shorter of picking up 10th place off Marussia, even though the Caterhams are clearly quicker now.
Yeah.
Guido van der Garde out qualifying Charles Peak. But.
And then forgetting where his garage was.
Yeah, rather comical. Brilliant. Keystone Cops, I think.
That was it.
Got described as, so we'll put that one to bed. Singapore maybe offering. I mean, Italy does tend to, because it's quite hard on the cars, it does tend to sometimes offer chances for the young teams, as we call them, but not so much this weekend. Okay then, gents, we need the of the weeks, so let's discuss them, shall we? Driver of the weekend.
It's got to be Nico Hülkenberg, I think. Or maybe Vettel, but I think it's Nico Hülkenberg's mine for fifth position. Yeah, in a slow cyber.
With a superb qualifying.
Yep, qualifying.
I mean, I did.
Yep, no, that's it.
I did. I mean, I like the effort Lewis had to go to, and almost summarising the man most talked about for the week. He was kind of the driver of the weekend in that he kind of got talked about most. And just the bit where he'd overtaken so many people, then had to come in the pits for his final pit stop, and then just had it all in front of him again behind Kimi. But I wouldn't necessarily argue with Nico, to be honest.
Some great options, great nominees. Nico, great. You've mentioned Lewis, Fernando coming up through the grid, getting through, solid drive for second place. You know, in a car that's, he always seems to get the best out of it at Monza, and that's a hard task. Again, Ricciardo, super quick, good quality, good finish. For me, I'm going to give it to Lewis, just purely because he showed that no quit, drove through, pulled through, got points out of it. Terrible qualifying, got himself in a hole, and just didn't give up. And all that stuff outside of the car and his depression about it and everything, it doesn't matter. What matters is when he did it in the car, and some of the moves that he pulled off to get past people, some of the battles he had, it literally, like, he was fighting for every single yard, and I think that's great. So I give it to Lewis.
It's nothing like watching Lewis in action like that. I love it. It's brilliant. Goat of the week, or bad performer. For me, be the person who decided that a superimposed advert for Pirelli on the start-finish straight every time they went through from a certain camera angle. He should be shot, metaphorically. Stupid idea.
Ridiculous. And also the person that allowed David Hasselhoff to wear a Red Bull shirt.
That too. I like it.
For me, Goat of the Week was whoever decided that the old school Testarossa wasn't allowed to be the safety car for the race. Because you saw it back in the
formation lap. Yeah. I was like, this is brilliant. Yeah. Oh, no, it's not old actually.
I think it was just there for a cameo. I think it's like, just trotted out. And you could probably hear it wheezing from the stands. I think it's that old. But for me, that was such a highlight, that whoever said that wasn't the safety car, and that someone, if it had been, I think someone should have just crashed off, just parked in the middle of the track, and just been like, we need a safety car, and just stood there as it went past. Would have been great. But no, it was, I mean, there wasn't actually that much that went wrong. There wasn't anything boneheaded or stupid. We mentioned Guido in the pits. DiResta's
crash
was a bit of a shame, but
yes,
there's nothing really there that you can look at and go, what a mug. No. So I think silly goats this week. So Pirelli, Kyle's one, which I've already forgotten.
The Hoff,
yeah. Who claims that the steering wheel looked exactly like the kit cars. He's like, one of the things I love about Hoff is he can always, no matter, you ask him any question, and within a sentence, he's turned it back into something that he used to do, something that made him famous. Absolutely brilliant. I'd love to hear him.
Did you see him and Bernie talking at the start?
No.
Oh, that would have been a brilliant conversation to over here.
Good Lord. To be a fly on that wall.
I would be tempted to give it to Paul DiResta, because I know he didn't have a lot of luck in places, but he did have one off that was, I'm not sure how much there was an issue with the car, and he did just drive into the back of someone in the race. Didn't have the best weekend, did it, when he's trying to prove what he's got.
And he didn't blame his team.
No, and he didn't blame his team, that's true. He did hold his hand. The guilt in his voice on the team radio when he went out of the race was there for all to hear. Team. At the results, and really there's only one you can give it to.
Go on then, who's that?
It has to be Red Bull, I think. 1-2 front row, lockout.
Yeah, and the track they have, as mentioned before.
They managed so many problems. They managed Webber's broken front wing and saw him 1-2, 1-3 finish. But Toro, especially maybe mention for Toro Rosso, because I thought they had a very good weekend too. So that's like two Red Bull teams, as if anyone needs two of them.
The dominance.
I think, can't disagree, really.
No, definitely. You special mention for Sauber, but I think it was more an individual effort on Nico's part. But to be able to just be a team mentioned in the running of that was good as well. Ferrari, not bad from them, and home Grand Prix did well. But in terms of sheer dominance, it's got to be the Red Bull family.
Maybe Ferrari should have had it for trying to slingshot their drivers during qualifying. maybe they should have got it for that. Highlights. Finally,
Alonso on Webber at the second chicane on the first lap.
Yes,
golden, absolutely golden. That's what I was talking about. That respect, that fight, that effort, and the pass by Romain Grosjean on Sergio Perez at the first chicane. You say these things about Roman, you know, having these nice moments. That was one of them. Really, really, him and Sergio, you just, who's going to get there? And who, they just held their line, both of them, and in the end, one of them had to back out. And you think, when you see Roman and Sergio there, you kind of think, oh my God, this is, oh no, great racing.
It was great racing.
Great racing by everyone. But I mean, and Hamilton's battles, coming back through, trying to get back up the, Hamilton's battle with Bottas, was brilliant, you know, it was great. Hamilton's brilliant battle with Bottas, yeah, it's nice and nice and alliterative. But you know, there was a lot of good racing that went on. It was a very enjoyable Grand Prix. So, but highlight of the week for me is definitely that move by Alonso on Webber. I mean, Alonso, you literally every time he does something like that, you just sit back and go, that is racing.
Yes,
embodied.
It was. I realised just as that overtake was finishing that I was biting my bottom lip. I was like, that's how you can tell it's good. Lewis's, I think it was on Kimi's, was brilliant because I think it was the third time he got to that point and you could just tell he tried to undercut him so he could get around him. Mm. Used the curves because he knew they had to just it was a overtake constructed over three laps and it was just absolute joy. Absolutely brilliant.
And also his overtake on Rosberg as well. I think he failed once. And then coming out of the first chicane again, he'd done the...
Oh, on the grand curve?
Yes.
Yeah, that was outstanding.
Great stuff. And maybe finally, and this could have been GOAT of the week as well, John Surtees doing the podium.
Was awkward.
I mean, he didn't really interview Seb, and then John Alesi, by just the time he was going to Fernando, just stopped him. Mm. And there was a little roll, because the camera, fortunately, was still looking straight back across the line, and you could see John Surtees kind of roll his eyes and... just sort of carry on chatting to Seb
as he had
done when he was interviewing him.
Yeah, exactly.
So that was cringeworthy.
But nice to see Jean Alesi up there. That was great. And my mum, who has been knows about F1 and has watched F1 for a long, I mean, she wouldn't say she was a fanatic, but literally I went, oh, it's Jean Alesi, and my mum went, who's that? Well, at that point it all kicked off. I went, what do you mean? But she sat there and went, I know who that other guy is, that's John Surtees. So you know John Surtees, but you don't know John Alesi.
Shocking.
That's it.
She does now.
She does. Well, she does, right. Damn right she does now, yeah.
All right, then. Well, I think that wraps up Italy. News just in. David Tillier has just come back from the Caribbean. Says he's now sitting down to watch the race. I expect we will hear all about his Caribbean adventures. Do you think they get Formula One in the Caribbean? They must do. Must be one of the countries on Formula One management's TV list.
What, broadcasting list? I'd say they get broadcast over there, yeah.
Better do. All right, then, while DT's doing that, we'll sign off and we'll return very soon with a preview for Singapore. In the meantime, get a hold of us on Twitter, should you so wish, at EDPF1, or me, at Michael J. Bailey. Kyle?
At K-Cumbers.
Ped?
At PedHD56. And if you check the EDP F1 feed, you will indeed see myself paying up to Michael Bailey for betting against Williams, scoring a point. I said Marussia would score points before Williams did, and then the very next race they went and proved me wrong.
Easiest so. £5.
Yeah.
Well, I cannot even comprehend the argument.
We'll make that back in some way.
More of Ped's great predictions coming up in our pre-Singapore pod. Until then, take care of yourselves. Thanks for listening, and goodbye.